guys. Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool, and our matching t-shirts today. We did it. We got the memo.
That's right.
It's working.
I've got some, I had to retool some shirts on the place where we get these printed up.
Yeah.
So I've got some that are coming your way with some new, like, mottos for a beer. Oh. Actually, nothing I created, but it's just something that I stole. A quotation.
There you go. Steal like an artist, right?
That's right. But it's a quotation about beer, which...
I like it.
And who knows? In this day and age of social media and the internet, who knows if that person even said it, right?
We don't know. I mean, it's like impossible to even fact check. The fact check is wrong. So it's like...
So we'll just take it and attribute that, and we'll just ride with it and see. But
I think it was Scott Smith who told me, you know, our buddy who preaches and does a lot of other stuff. He's like, you know, the first time you use a quote, you're like, so-and-so said. And the second time you use a quote, it's like, it's been said that. And then your third time, it's like, as I've always said, all true. It's just a chain of logic.
That's
you just gotta go through the chain of logic there.
It eventually becomes yours. So
yeah, I mean, you did say it.
Yep.
I mean, if you repeated it, you still said it. So, who was it that got in big trouble? Like in the person, Jay Shetty, he got in big trouble, like, but he's still out there. He's still thriving.
Of course.
But like it's he
usually
was quoting,
forgotten.
Yeah. That was like the news of the week. And then it just went away. So don't worry about it. Just steal everything. Plagiarize our show. Copy our show. We don't care.
We don't care. As long as you get it out there, as long as you like even give some reference of it, we don't care.
Yeah. We just do this for the beer anyway. Let's be real. So
exactly. So today we got another random topic, Sean. We're going to talk about. I'm going to be There's actually some takeaways from Sun Tzu's Art of War and the
more stealing.
I like more it. Stealing. I'm going to steal from his. Well, his book is pre-copyright. Like it's open. That's like
true.
Open source.
Public
so
domain.
I can take. Yeah, it's in public domain. So if you go to your average bookstore, you'll see about 50 copies of The Art of War, and it's just in different covers and just repackaged different ways. But this one I actually pulled from an article, and I'll give the guy credit. But it's on The Art of Persuasion. From Sun Tzu. So there's three key takeaways on persuasion and the art of war that we'll talk about here.
Cool. And I'm going to share two kind of forgotten old school marketing techniques, local marketing to be specific.
Yep.
And these both caught my attention. That's why I'm sharing them, because they actually caught my attention. And I will probably spend money with both these companies in the next week or two. So that's a good sign that, you know, maybe what they're doing is working. So even if you don't have a local, it's good to kind of ask yourself, is there something like that? Or what's the closest thing I could do to that?
Right.
Right. So, I'll have two like physical examples here, like holding my hand examples of marketing that caught my attention and will get me to spend money for sure.
I always love those case studies. What works? Yeah.
So
good marketing. All right.
But first we got to talk about our beverages, and I got to be honest, I'm a little nervous about mine.
I'm disappointed with mine. So you're nervous. I'm disappointed. I'm not looking forward to this one because it's an IPA.
It's a rough start. It's a rough start today. So I was at the old HEB last night. And I was going down the aisles, and I was mask free, by the way. And I actually saw a couple others without masks. So I was very proud of our Texans, even here in Austin.
Sure.
And we're still like 97% compliant, but in Travis County, which is Austin. But anyway, send the hate mail to Jonathan at persuasionbythepoint.com. I saw on the shelf, I recognized the can. I was like, oh, that's my favorite brewery, the Tupps Brewery, which does the full grown series that, you know, I've had on here that I sent you, the full grown St. Nick, the full grown, you know, Jack at Halloween, like all those full grown series. Yeah. But this one is not a porter, stout, anything like that. This is a lighter beer, but it's from Tupps Brewery. So it's kind of like you had on the last episode. It's like you had a true, you had a Founders, which is tried and true, but it was a little bit different type.
Right.
So I picked it up, but I did the singles. I wasn't ready to commit to a six pack. Yeah. I was like, I'm not going that far. Like,
I don't just blame you. Yeah.
I don't know. So it's a juicy, it's a juice pack. So it's a double dry hopped pale ale, not India pale ale. So there is some hope.
Yeah.
And I did flip around before I actually put it in the cart or the basket. Cause I don't do a cart. Cause I'm a man. I carry my, my little basket with me. So I, the bit, the IBUs is only 30.
Oh, wow.
So it's not, so I'm guessing this may actually taste like a juice box. It says the double dry hopped pale ale is so juicy and bursting with tropical aromas. We have a hard time keeping it in the can. So, we shall see.
It I like that keep picture. Keeping, yeah, have a hard time keeping the can. So you're expecting.
Yeah. So, bursting with flavor.
Quite a bit of flavor there.
Keep cold, drink fresh. Now, I also feel like this is a very summery beer, just the colors, juice. So I'm going to drink this one straight from the can. I don't think this is a glass.
It's not meant to be a glass. I probably should do the same with mine.
This feels like a on the boat, out on Lake Austin, Lake Travis
type of drink.
Yeah.
Might as well get a koozie action.
So what do you got over there on your side of the world?
So I'm not thrilled about this one, but it is an IPA. It's a Mosaic IPA from High Wire, but it's a High Pitch Mosaic IPA from High Wire Brewing. Now, I'm a fan of High Wire because we've had
High Wire is good.
Yeah, they've got a great line of their Bed of Nails is amazing. That's one of my favorites. Anyway, it's like I said earlier on the last show, it's just so hard to find, porters and stouts this time of year. And even just, just an amber ale or something like that. You know, you're just seeing everything's going lighter with the change of season. So I went ahead and picked this one up just because, again, like on the last episode with Founders, I like High Wire. So why not give them a shot on this IPA? So, just an overview. It's kind of like yours, Sean. It's bursting with fruity flavors. It's bright citrus, tropical fruit aromas. Expect big grapefruit, tangerine, and subtle melon flavors from a chorus of Mosaic Centennial hops. It's 6.7 ABV and it's 55 IBUs. So I'm going to pucker up when I drink this thing.
Yeah, that's pretty high. So,
yes, and I am going to pour mine.
We ended up with the same t-shirt. We both ended up with bursting flavors in our beer today.
That's right.
So we will see whether or not these things live up to the expectation. That's a
terrible pour.
Man, those were all right. I'll go ahead and pour just because it's kind of what we do on the show.
I know because we all want to see it.
Yeah,
we all want to see what these flavors that are bursting out of the can have to get in. Ooh, that looks like grapefruit juice right there.
I know it's like our apple juice or.
I don't know, man. You maybe should have kept in the can. Oh, okay, that doesn't look too bad.
It's getting there. It's but yeah, it is an amazing how much more foam there is on these compared to like the stouts and the porters.
Yep.
They definitely get a little more foamy.
They do.
So I'm going to let that sit for a minute and I'll just drink out of the can.
Okay.
But yeah, the juice pack, it's only 5.5, which is good. Cause I don't know what the ABV was on the last episode that we just recorded. And I had two of them, but I was definitely feeling it. And I still don't know what the ABV was, but it had to be around 8 or higher. I think I do see it on there. Just didn't see it before.
Get the
quick draw glasses out.
Those are sweet.
It wasn't where I expected it to be. No, it's not on there. That's just the fluid ounces. That's weird that I thought that was required by law of some kind. I thought there was an ABV mandate going around the country.
Wow, that's unusual not to put it on.
Yeah. So anyway. So yeah, but I definitely felt the buzz on the last episode. So
well, it must be.
Plus, I was trying to keep up with our guest. He had four beers.
No.
On the show,
he was like, that was stealth right there. I mean, like pouring when I didn't even.
And he never stopped talking the whole time, and he still had four beers.
He must have had them like just the six pack just right below him, where he was just like grabbing one after another.
And the camelback going right, but just tilt his head to the side. Had to be what was going on. So that was a good episode, though.
He sent me a text afterward and said he had a blast. So.
He didn't text me. What a jerk. What a jerk.
I could tell he's a great salesperson because after he replied initially a couple of weeks ago when he replied to one of the queries I put out, I emailed him initially and then I didn't get back with him right away. He found my number. Yes, he did some digging, found my number, wow. And then texted me. Hey, just making sure you got my...
That's good follow-up right there.
It is. Fantastic.
Good stuff.
You would expect that from a really good salesperson.
Absolutely. All right, so today we're going to be we got to drink our beer. We're going to be talking about a flight of persuasion. We'll get into that. So, yeah, let's clink our beers and hold our breath while we drink these.
There we go. Oh, man. I do not like citrusy beer.
Yeah. Which is funny, you know, because I love like a lemon shandy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's different than like the citrus hoppy beer.
Yeah.
You know? These beers have just a very long tail aftertaste to me. And you smell them before you like drink them.
Yeah. The aroma hits me like way before I take the sip. And I think that's what sets me up because you're right. The taste really is not that bad. I mean, it's not my preference, but it's not that bad. But what that aroma that hits you right before you take it, man, not good. Not good.
Yeah. It's like walking through the perfume department at a department store. Right. You know, it's like when you go from the mall into the department store, when we used to be able to do that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's like, whoa, all these smells coming at you at once. It's like, that's to me what a lot of these pale ales are like, but this is the same way. This, you know, you can look at it and tell that's what it's going to taste like.
Yep.
But it doesn't taste like fruit punch or anything. That would have been fine. Like I'd rather have Mike's hard lemonade or something.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's hear it. What's your score?
Even though I love Tupp's Brewery, I'm going to have to stick to their dark beers.
Like the death nail, even though.
Yeah. Even though I really like, I feel like I'm a judge on American Idol or The Voice or something. It's like, even though I really like Tupp's Brewery and I like your past performances, I got to say this was not your best work. Keep trying. But tonight I'm going to have to give you a solid 2.0.
Mm. Wow, that's rough, man.
Yeah, it's
not, at least you only got one, right?
I'm glad I bought the single.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to follow you with a, I'm going to give this a little better score than a 2 because even though I hate the aroma, the finish isn't that bad. So I'll say, I'm going to give it a 2, I'll probably give this one a 2.9. 2.9.
Okay.
So for an IPA, it's not bad. I tell you, if that citrusy aroma wasn't so strong, I'd probably give it even a better score. But it's just
This is
too much.
This has a little bit of a lingering aftertaste, which I don't like. It just lingers a little too long. Yeah. So maybe they just want you to keep drinking, so there's no aftertaste.
By the way, I'm a true heretic today because I'm drinking an IPA from a Guinness glass.
Well, that's probably the problem. You need like one of those fancy weird glasses that releases.
Exactly.
You know, whatever. Was it the Sam Adams has the laser cut thing in the bottom so it creates the right whatever. I don't believe any of that crap. Just good copy, but I don't know if it's true.
That's right. All right.
So. All right, well, let's roll. So you're going to talk about Sun Tzu and the Art of War and ideas you stole from that and how you apply it to sales or marketing. Which are we talking about here?
Persuasion
in general.
Sales and marketing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a copy, anybody that's in business, I don't care if you're selling, if you're a copywriter, if you're in business,
if you're married,
yeah, you should read The Art of War, and you should reference it from time to time, because anytime you're dealing with people, like I said, everybody's selling, everybody's negotiating in life, and everybody's doing business. If you're not, I don't know what you're doing, but
you know what I think about when I hear The Art of War every single time? It's like burned into my memory now. The scene from Battleship they're on the deck and they're like trying to shoot the guy. And he's like, hit the enemy where you're not. And the Japanese guy's like, that's not what it means. All I can think about every time I hear The Art of War.
That's a Michael Bay movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why I haven't seen it.
Yeah, turn a board game into a movie. Great idea.
Yep. It sounds Michael Bayish.
Hey, he sells.
Oh, I know. Yes,
it's like the old, rich dad, poor dad, like quotes, like, I'm not a best writing author. I'm a best selling author.
That's right.
It's like Michael Bay sells a lot of tickets.
Yep.
Like, you may not like his movies, but they sell a lot of tickets. Something to be learned there for sure.
That's true.
The people what they want.
Transformers. He did all of those Transformer movies. Yep. As bad as some of those were, they grossed. I mean, just
ridiculous amounts.
I mean, it's like, yeah. I mean, they were just killing it at the box office every time he threw one out. So
yeah,
like, why not keep doing it?
And Battleship was huge because there was really no big name actors in it. Mm-hmm. Like it was a lot of Rihanna was in there, but she wasn't known as an actress,
right?
Or actor. I guess they're all actors now.
Yep.
God, you're so insensitive, Jonathan. So sexist to use a word like actress. So 1980s of you.
So here's, I'm going to let you go first. I'm going to save the three principles of persuasion from Sun Tzu's Art of War. We'll save those for last and let you go ahead. What a tease. Yeah, give your takeaway. So we'll keep we'll string people along for a little bit longer.
So this week, we all get the flyers in the mail on Wednesdays that have all the different local stuff. Mm-hmm. So we get like three of those a week. We get like one on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, one on Friday. These little flyer packs. And we live in a neighborhood that a lot of people want to target because we have money in this neighborhood.
Yep.
Or they think we do anyway. There's a lot of people in line ahead of them, but anyway.
Yeah.
So, but there's one, and I was like, these two things caught my attention. Yeah. So number one was just, it's a new restaurant coming to town, and it's just a 50%. It's a half page in one of the flyers. So it's probably a four page flyer. So it's just like front and the back, and then the insides. And it's for a new poke house restaurant, which I like poke bowls. So it caught my attention. Mm-hmm. But here's what I think is interesting about it. One, it's got a very clear offer, 50% off, right? So that's a big offer. It's not like a 10% offer where I'm like, take it or leave it, whatever. 50% is pretty significant. And it's not like 50% off your second. Like it's 50% off, period, which is a nice offer. But the other thing is that I thought was interesting is that they're not even open yet. They're coming soon. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would be afraid to market before they're actually open and to commit to marketing before they're open. But that's when you got to start marketing. Like you got to start, planting seeds and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, and this is another thing I think about the online marketers. These guys are probably, by the time this ad runs, because this is probably a franchise, right? Poke House, probably a franchise. Mm-hmm. They're in a strip center, strip mall. So they're probably at build out of probably $500,000 before they ever open the doors. Not to mention training, franchise fees and everything else. And we think internet marketing is hard. Oh yeah. Or some people do. And like they got, they're probably in the hole $750,000 at this point. Mm-hmm. And they're still getting 50% off and they're willing to spend money on marketing.
Sure.
Like that's, they'll be successful. I have no doubt. Oh, like yeah. Anybody that's willing to do that is going to be successful.
Right.
It's the people that don't start marketing until like they're about to go out of business.
It's too late then.
That's why they go out of business.
That's right. Yeah. It's too little too late.
Yeah. I do this workout where it's like this electro muscle stimulation. You wear this whole full body suit and like basically you plug yourself into the wall and it zaps you.
Yeah.
And they were having some trouble with attracting members and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, well, are y'all marketing? They're like, well, we're doing Instagram posts. And I'm like, that's not enough. You're going to have to do some paid marketing, geo-targeted to this area because people are only going to drive about 10 to 15 minutes. And they finally found like a lead gen company that was doing something for a similar the exact same franchise in another state. And they were like, should we do that? Or can you help us? I was like, no, if you got somebody that is already proven for your exact franchise in another state that their legion works, like pour as much money in that as you can. And sure enough, they went from zero leads per week to now they had like last week, I think they had 25 leads per week. And then like our last guest said, there's a difference between leads and then getting to show up. But I think they had 10 or 12 people come in for first appointments compared to zero because they were trying to do organic stuff.
Right.
So like local marketing works.
It does.
You just got to do it. Like it's scary. It costs money, but you got to do it.
This organic crap that people have been pushing for so long or are saying that it works, it's time consuming and it does
work. It's just, the tail is so much longer.
It is. Yeah.
You have to go in knowing that and you have to be able, cause I'm rereading the book Launch by Michael Stelzner. And it's about 10 years old, but it's all about organic and like giving away the free stuff. But he says in the book, like this is a long-term foundation type strategy. Mm-hmm. Like he even said, he's like, I'm going to collect 10,000 emails before I ever sell anything. It was just a different plan. So as long as you know that, it's fine. Yeah. And if you got the cash reserves that you could say, I'm going to pay content writers or I'm going to pay myself to write content for 3 to 6 months while it builds its authority and ranking, that's fine. It's just, you can't expect to do that and start making money right away.
Yeah.
So as long as you're aware of what you're doing, I think it's fine.
Yep.
And I do think long-term organic is like very, very valuable because on the other side, paid marketing, as soon as you stop it, it stops working.
Right.
So you got to have both.
You got to have both, but it's going to take, understand that it's going to take time. And, you know, I was having this conversation this week with a sales manager of a company that, you know, he's really pushing. He's been wanting for over a year to be, to be a sponsor of my podcast. And, you know, he's like, I can't get through to my CFO the value of this. And he's like, yeah. And I told him, I said, listen, I get people all the, you know, I share with him the numbers of our show, the downloads on, and this is from one of my industry shows that I do in the composite snitch, and I share with him the downloads. And I'm like, for what it costs you, like for 6 months of advertising, one sale would like pay for that. Cause it's residual. Yeah. What they do is like a consumable product. You know, they land one customer and they're buying over and over and over again. It doesn't make sense that a CFO can't see from a number standpoint, can't see that, but you know, their CFO is a bean counter. You know, and so he's looking at the cost, all everything spending related, and he doesn't get that. And his answer to them wanting to spend money on podcast advertising was like, nah, you don't need, just get out and get on LinkedIn and post messages to your customers or people that follow you on LinkedIn.
Right, because that doesn't cost anything except the employee's time who you may be paying $75,000 or $80,000 a year.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, I'm already paying them, so I'll just have them do LinkedIn. Right. But yeah, it's crazy. So item number two, this was I think this is a good example of very relevant marketing, like time sensitive type marketing. Mm-hmm. And this was basically inside of one of the normal like fast food, you know, that has a lot of fast food or grocery stuff in it. This right. was like a loose piece inside of it, but it's,
oh, cool.
So it's a flyer, but they did it like separately. 'Cause you can see it's got its own like pre-sort from the mail. Mm-hmm. So the mailman probably stuck it in there. It probably was meant to go on its own, yeah. probably every door direct mail, if I'm guessing, because mm-hmm. it has no address or anything like that. It's just local customer. So you can do every door direct mail. If you don't know what every door direct mail is, literally you can go on USPS.gov and, or just do a Google search for every door direct mail. Mm-hmm. And it's a program the post office has where you don't really, you pay a flat fee for a certain carrier route. So you okay. can get super hyper targeted mm-hmm. to, so if you, for instance, if you had a pool cleaning business or a pet sitting business, you would look at, or like back when I had my handyman business, they didn't have every door direct mail. But if sure. I wanted to get back in that, this is what I would do. Mm-hmm. You can pick out the neighborhoods that are most likely to need your services, can afford your services, all that stuff, and target just that carrier route. Mm-hmm. You go to the post office, you ask them how many people are in that carrier route. You get the flyers printed up, you drop them off at the post office, and then sometime in the next week, they'll send them out.
Sure.
So this one was from a landscape company, a tree company, actually. You know, we just had the winter storm back in February. So theirs is like, hey, good afternoon. Our company's larger crew will be doing tree work in your neighborhood in the next week or so. Mm-hmm. If you have a large tree or multiple trees you need removed, trim, or need clearing work done, now would be a great time to save on a larger tree care project. We have certified arborists on staff. Call now for an estimate. And then, of course, they use the handwriting font for the call number and a signature. You know, we did have a storm. There's a lot of people cleaning up right now. Mm-hmm. And when you're in these suburban neighborhoods, like, it's not like live, you know, when we grew up in Georgia, Jonathan, where you could just throw stuff in the back half of the acreage, you know, have a brush pile and sure. set it on fire.
Right.
You can't do that. Like, where do you, in suburban areas, like you, somebody's got to haul it off.
Right.
Right. So, even more than just like the clearing, sometimes it's just like, if I did clear, like, how would I get rid of it? So people call services.
Right.
But, you know, this is timely. We just had a storm. A lot of people have broken limbs, broken trees. Mm-hmm. You know, we're coming into spring. People are starting to get out in their yard and do things. So it's like perfect timing to just have somebody come in and do it. And these people are top of mind.
Absolutely.
And it's a nice little letter. And it caught my attention. So even though I'm in a rental, like if I was a homeowner,
yeah,
I would call them up.
I was just from that alone. Yeah. Handwritten too. Like,
yeah. And, so,
or at least the bottom of it's handwritten. I mean,
yeah. And as you know, like when I did my handyman business, this was my whole business was flyers and mailboxes. Mm-hmm. I did it manually. I didn't have every door direct mail, but, I got calls for like up to 3 years after I stopped doing handyman work. I would continue to get calls every single month.
Right.
It's crazy. So,
well, it's funny how the power of stuff like that works, because we kind of, the house that we bought, we targeted like a couple of neighborhoods for where we wanted to buy a house recently. Mm-hmm. And we targeted two specific areas. And we just wrote out a simple flyer, put that we're looking for a house with these specifications in it. And we're looking to move in the neighborhood. And sure enough, people were like responding. I mean, we got a decent amount of response just from that, because people, you know, people usually want to help people out when they read something like that, you know, and they yeah. respond to something. And when you sign off on it at the end and basically kind of make it a little more personal, it wasn't business related. It's like, our family's looking for a house in this neighborhood. Who do you know that?
Is that how you found your house? The one you just moved to?
Yeah. It's funny, because what happened was we got a call from somebody that got the flyer that we stuck them. We actually drove to two neighborhoods on a Sunday afternoon just to just out, you know, one afternoon driving around, we printed up a bunch of flyers, put them in because of this market right now. You got to get ahead of it, right? Because it's crazy.
Because once it's listed, there's 20 showings.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so that was our whole reasoning behind it. But we would just put these flyers in people's box. And yeah, the house that we have today, it wasn't the owners that called us, but it was like, it was somebody that lives close to them in this neighborhood that said, these people are listing it. And gave us kind of forewarning that, like, a heads up that they were about to list this. We jumped on it and we actually looked at it the day they actually listed it. I mean, they put it out there. So we kind of had a heads up.
That's amazing. Like, it wasn't even the owner. It was a nosy neighbor.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, just want to let you know, these people
John's
are selling.
About to sell his house. Yeah. that is why I did not realize that. Yeah. That's a great story.
Yeah. So it works. I mean, you can apply that to just about anything like sales and looking for property, but you know, people invariably, I think people want to help you out and you know, people love to get things like that. It's becoming more rare that you see something like that, you know, in your box. So
yeah, I think
It doesn't feel like a business flyer. It feels like, you know, even that one that you're showing me feels more personal, you know.
So. Right. Even though it went out to the entire, you know, neighborhood.
Right.
It just stands and it's really nice paper. Like it's like not cardstock, not quite cardstock, but it's like resume stock at least.
Yep.
So it wasn't like a super cheap flyer, which also made it stand out, you know, in the mail.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I think the way you could apply that, like even if you were doing marketing to the entire country or the entire world, you know, you could have your Facebook rep or whoever, you could break that down at least by state and have the same ad, duplicate it 50 times or at least by the biggest states, right? California, Texas, New York. Hey, are you in New York? Whatever. I know sometimes you can't do identification, so you'd have to obviously get it compliant.
Right.
But maybe you just kind of get, you know, because people in Texas respond to things that are Texas based, you know, or mention Texas because they're very proud of Texas. Like, sure. We have tortilla chips in the shape of Texas.
In the shape of the state.
That's crazy. I don't think any other state goes to those kind of extremes. But we do. So
it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, so if you know, and Texas has, I mean, you could make a fortune and never leave Texas from a marketing standpoint. Like there's enough people here to make a career.
Oh, sure.
No matter what you're doing.
Be your own country.
Between Dallas, Houston, and we're working on it. Dallas, Houston, Austin. We got to figure out how to get them out to keep Texas. But
yeah. They've been
all right. Before I say something stupid,
they've been threatening to break off for a long time.
Yeah,
they may do it one of these days.
I mean, we got access to the Gulf, so I mean, I don't know what else. You got a port.
That's right.
You know, so
they're bigger than some countries out there. So, heck yeah,
yeah, for sure. All right, so let's talk about Sun Tzu.
Sun Tzu.
Tzu.
That reminds me of a scene from The Sopranos where the guy's trying to impress his mob boss. I don't know if you ever watched The Sopranos. He's brown nosing, and he realized the mob boss, which is Tony Soprano, was reading the Art of War. He's got word of it, and he's kind of a brown noser, so he was telling some of the other people within the mob family, "Oh yeah, I'm reading Sun Tzu." And one of the other guys goes, "It's Sun Tzu, you brown noser, Sun Tzu."
Sun Tzu. I like it.
All right. So here's the first thing, first takeaway. And these are all three persuasion principles. So you can learn a lot from sales, from business, politics, everything. I mean, this has been used by probably military generals, Patton, all these guys have used this for years. But in terms of persuasion, so one of the key takeaways that he mentions is if you know the enemy and you know yourself, you need not fear the results of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer defeat. And lastly, if you know neither the enemy or yourself, you're in trouble. You will succumb in every battle. So the key is identifying a person's point of resistance and tailor your proposal accordingly. So how does this relate to persuasion? He talks about, by the way, I want to mention, I want to give this guy credit. His name is Sean Lydon. I'll post a link to this article. But the first principle is basically knowing your audience's greatest point of resistance, the enemy, which is either apathy. And we actually talked about this last week when we talked about hero funnels. Mm-hmm. But knowing we talked about resistance, and the enemy can be apathy, skepticism, anger, fear, distraction. You're self-aware about strengths and weaknesses of your message. You'll gain insight into how to tailor your proposal. So, you know, entering at the right point in your customer's conversation or your prospect's conversation, knowing that what they're thinking, you know, being prepared, like knowing your enemy or knowing the person that you're up against. So if you create a compelling message but don't know your audience's greatest point of resistance at that moment, then you can pretty much expect bad results. And so we said last week, you know, I used the example of the golf, my friend years ago that wanted to do golf training for, or fitness training for golfers. And I was like, I had to be honest with him because it was like, that's not where they're, you know, that's not one of the things that's on their mind all the time. They're not thinking about shaving a few strokes off of their game by improving their core, right? You don't understand. If you think you know the market, that's not the market. You know fitness, yes, but you don't know golf. You know, you don't know golfers well enough to know that that's what they're going to spend their time and money on for the long term. Maybe professional people will do that, but not your general market.
And to be fair, like, you could get there with good copy, sure, but you would have to focus on eliminating strokes from your game, mm-hmm, or driving further or something like that, anything that's related to the core. And then, you know, 2/3 of the way through, or maybe you never reveal it until the course itself or the product itself, that the way you do that is through core power and right, doing more Russian twists with a 20-pound medicine ball or whatever the secret is. Like, you know, or just being more flexible with your core or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So there is a way to do that. But to your point, you have to start with the conversation going on in their head, not
their emotional, like
solution.
What gets them going? It's like we were talking about with, you know, with Eric on our last episode, you know, what really resonates with people, what gets them emotional? You know, why is that important to you? So he talks about
make them cry. That was the whole point of the last show. Make them cry.
So he says, as Aristotle put it in his Art of Rhetoric, proofs from the disposition of the audience are produced whenever they are induced by a speech of emotional state. We do not give judgment in the same way when aggrieved and when pleased in sympathy and revulsion. So emotional state, the current emotional state, what is your audience or what is your core, your prospects or your core audience, what are they feeling at that time? And you've got to tap into that. Target the emotional state. Where do you want to take the audience once you know what their emotional state is? And it sounds manipulative, but it's really not. It's really meeting their needs, like understanding them. So understanding, and you can call it your enemy. In this case, Sun Tzu says, understand your enemy. In this case, it's understanding the enemy is not the person that you're selling to. It's the enemy is understanding what they're dealing with. What is the problem in their life that they're having to deal with, and how can you fix that for them? So,
100%.
All right. Principle 2, in war, let your objective be victory, not lengthy campaigns, right? So we get this all mixed up sometimes. Define victory and craft a proposal that achieves it. So victory is the end goal. But sometimes it's like David Ogilvy. He's, you know, the father. We've talked about him a number of times, father of modern advertising. Define victory in his classic book, We've talked about it, Ogilvy on advertising, when he said, quote, "When I write an advertisement, I don't want you to tell me that you'll find it creative. I want you to find it so interesting that you'll buy the product." So we have to focus on the end goal is to sell the product, right? The end goal is to get them to buy and not be clever, not be creative, you know, not win awards for creativity or anything like that. It's to sell the product.
Yeah, it's like what we said on the last episode with Eric. It's like the kiss of death for salespeople is, "Oh, Jonathan, that was a great presentation. Let's get back to you on that." It's like, "Ah, I don't care if it's a good presentation. I want to know, like, absolutely, sign the line, you know, sign the contract." So yeah, I think that's really important. Like when we look at funnels, you know, online funnels are really popular, right? So, yeah. And people can get, you know, so complicated. It's like, all right, you're going to opt in for this. And then there's a 3-day challenge and there's a 46 part email series that hooks to Messenger, which activates a text that does this and does this. And like you diagram it out on like Funnelytics or a whiteboard. And it's like, there's so many moving parts and the campaign gets so long.
Yeah.
That just the idea of like solving the person's problem and getting the sale gets lost.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you've totally missed the point.
Yeah, you made this super campaign mm-hmm. and your battle is now like 3 years long when you could have won the war and like,
sure,
you know, which I think if there's any company that does this really well, it's Agora, and they go after the sale on the first time you hear about their stuff, right? It's with a long sales letter and they go for the sale right away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, like they're going to try to end the battle on day one.
Yep.
Now they do have other things that if they don't, they'll continue to follow up and all that kind of stuff. Sure. But from day one, they're not planning a 30-day campaign and be like, well, it's gotta be at least 30 days before somebody buys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They try to get you on day one, the most simple, straightforward way they can. If that doesn't work, they'll continue to fight.
Oh, but sure.
Yeah.
And we've all seen examples of companies that, like, especially in marketing companies today, where they'll try to, it's almost like their goal is to avoid winning the battle, right? Because they just want to, like, they want to continue to, like, to build stuff and grow your brand and do all these things. But they, you know, at the end of the day, they haven't done anything that's effectively won you a sale.
Yeah. Like, hate when like I go to like a software site or something and they're like, "Yeah, let's get on a call." And it's like a 10-minute call. And it's like, "Okay, so the next step is we schedule a demo." I'm like, "Oh my God, how much is it?
Yeah.
I need this problem solved." Like, yeah. I don't have 3 weeks to do sales calls to figure out, you know, like, let's lay it down. Like, tell me the whole story up front. And then if I have questions that a demo will answer, then we'll go to the demo route.
Right. Right.
But like, don't put me through a qualification, then a demo, then I got to talk to the sales, you know, the tech manager to see if my integrations are going to work or not work and see if we're a quote good fit. Mm-hmm. Like, come on. I mean, I understand what you're doing. And I think like there's a certain amount of your population that like you at least got to allow them to buy earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then everybody else you take through the longer process, but there's at least, especially on inbound, you know, they came across your site, they were searching on Google, mm-hmm. how to solve this problem. Your name comes up. Like, that's not a cold traffic lead at that point. I mean, it kind of is, but it's much warmer because they have buyer's intent.
Yeah.
And I think people forget they're not doing a good job of segmenting and differentiating between casual lookers and people with high buyer intent. Those are two different paths that mm-hmm. people need to go down.
Yep.
You know, curiosity and buyer intent are very different.
That's right. And like you said earlier, if they want to buy, don't make it challenging.
Yeah. Make it easy.
Make it easy. Like,
yeah, there's a good copywriter that I follow. And when he was talking about Facebook ads, he writes long copy Facebook ads, mm-hmm. but he breaks his ad down into three parts. And basically one is for like super hungry people that are ready to make a decision. And the next one is for like people who need a little bit more information. And then like for the skimmer. So he writes his ad so that in the first third, you know what it's about. And if you're ready, there's a link right there to take action.
Sure.
But if you're not, you know, for the people who need a little bit more, then he goes into a little bit more detail, kind of expands it out, another link. Mm-hmm. And then for the skimmers, yeah, he has another one that's like, okay, here, go here and learn more, mm-hmm, which I think is brilliant. It's like a, it's just a really, it's a way to hit all different parts of the buying public. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. Super smart. Lastly, principle three is confront resistance without being confrontational. So Sun Tzu says, hence to fight and conquer in all your battles is not supreme excellence. Supreme excellence consists in breaking the enemy's resistance without fighting. So, so what your goal is, you know, we talked about, and we actually talked about on the last episode with Eric on selling memberships, but, when you engage in pushy, aggressive, or manipulative like tactics, you know, what happens every time is people's resistance, that wall of resistance just automatically comes up. So what they your goal is to create a compelling message that's tailored to that person's interest and can be a powerful way to break through. So again, talking about, we've like honed in on this so many times, but you know, meeting them where the conversation or where the emotional sticking point is in their life. What do they really want? Effective persuasion allows the other person to arrive at conclusions themselves. Remember, you know, Eric even touched on this on the last episode. We want that prospect to arrive at the conclusion themselves, making them more receptive to us rather than us pushing that. So that's the art of persuasion, is making the other person feel like they're making the decision ultimately. So,
yeah, which goes back to one of my favorite marketing movies, which is Inception.
Yep, exactly. Right?
It's like, if we're going to make this work, it's got to be their idea.
Their idea, absolutely.
Right. So, you have to do the research, you have to do all those things, mm-hmm, ask the questions so that it becomes their idea, not your idea.
Yep.
And absolutely. I think a lot of people get trapped in ego. And they want to sell and they want to make the sale and they want the credit for making the sale, mm-hmm, that they brought this revolutionary new product, you know, in your case, Jonathan, like, you're the hero, you swoop in, here's the product that will save your manufacturing process. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's what you want, you're going to have a hard time making sales. Yeah. You know, if you come in like the Columbo method, like we've talked about, and you're like, I don't know if this will work for you, but I found this little thing and it's like,
sure,
seems to be working for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit more, what do you think?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah, I could use that for this, this, and this. Really? Are you sure? Yeah. Cause I don't know if it'll work for that, but tell me more about this.
Right. That's like, I always love to use that approach. And how do you think this would work in your operation? Cause I want them to always, mm-hmm, say it, right?
Right.
You know, because when they say it, they believe it. So I always say, like, how do you feel like this process would work in your company, in your process, in your manufacturing process? So when I get them to describe that, well, you know, we can make it work. You know, we could set this piece of equipment up here, make the process a little bit easier. And then usually I'll follow up questions was, how do you think that would make your process easier? Right. And again, mm-hmm, you know,
they tell you,
they start explaining me. So like, you know, all I'm doing is like, uh-huh, yeah, cool. So you've just basically, you're basically persuading yourself right there. So that's the key, is always getting them to say it by asking the right questions too.
Yeah. And neurologically, like literally in the brain, because if you explain a process to somebody and they're just like, okay, yeah, uh-huh, it's never really clicking in their brain.
No.
If you ask questions and you ask them to describe, mm-hmm, how it might or might not work,
right,
now their brain has to process it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's basic, like, you know, not even NLP. It's just like how the brain works. Then now that becomes important because they're having to solve the equation, solve the problem.
Yeah.
Exactly. Instead of you just telling them what the answer is.
Right.
You don't remember it that way.
Yep.
You remember it when you have to describe it.
Yep.
It's like, I mean, that's, you know, Stephen Covey, one of the seven habits is to teach what you want to learn, basically. Yep. I don't remember exactly what it is, but like once you learn a concept, if you really want to learn it, you start teaching it.
Yeah.
And that's basically, you're kind of forcing them to teach you how your product would fit in their process.
Yep. This reminds me a lot of that book, Instant Influence, that we've talked about in the past.
You know, yeah.
Getting them to say,
how they would solve the problem. And
I used a lot of that. I took a lot of that after you had recommended that book. I used a lot of that with my teenagers and it was amazing.
Yeah.
Some of the results I got. So
it's so fast. It's like, it's 6 or 7 minutes or even less, cause it's like 6 quick questions.
Exactly.
And then you leave the choice in their hands. But at that point they've already, that's one of my favorite sales processes. If you don't have a lot of time, just super effective for sure. Well, that's some good stuff.
Yeah. And again, the book is The Art of War. It's a classic.
Classic. Like classics before classics were classics.
I still am going to do, my next book is going to be Art of War and Selling Related. That's going to be my next book on the horizon.
It's time.
One of these days. Yeah. It's time. It really is. It's been 5 years since my last, so.
You had a year during lockdown. What were you doing, man?
No, I had all this extra time. What was I doing?
I don't know. Making t-shirts, I guess. Drinking beer, apparently.
By the way, I got to mention, we get comments from time to time on our YouTube channel. It's funny, and I like to listen to them. Some of them are, most of them are actually really good, good comments. We had one comment, which was actually, it was like a backhanded comment, I think.
of course.
But it said, your content is really good, but you guys take forever to get to it. Like, he's like, because we work up to it with our beer. He didn't want to hear all the beer and the ratings and all that stuff. So to that, I have to say, you know what? There is a, there's this little slider thing on your video, like, and you can just like move it. So if it's, you don't want to hear minutes. That, because this part of our show, man, this is part of what we do.
Yeah. It's about 10 minutes. It is what it is. Like,
generally 10 minutes, you just, the simple solution to that, you just move that little slider on your video 10 minutes.
Yeah.
If you don't want to hear our beer reviews, man, or our commentary, or our, our incredible humor, like our comedic humor. So,
I mean, that's probably one guy out of millions,
But he did say, he gave us a compliment. He said, man, you guys have great stuff, but.
But. All right.
Take too long to get to it.
YouTube user 43618. Like, if you're that busy that you can't listen to 10 minutes of beer banter.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
That's right.
We'll start a cigar episode instead.
Exactly.
So,
All right. With that said, thanks for listening, guys. You can find us persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your channels. And we thank you for listening. You can leave us 5 stars if you have the opportunity, and we would greatly appreciate it if you want. Again, putting that on your, I'm not trying to persuade you, but you might want to do that. Give us 5 stars while you're at it, Sean. It's been fun, and we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.